simplistic view, because if the rule of law is the bedrock of our society, then we have to understand that the bedrock of the rule of law is our shared moral values as a citizenry. And throughout our history, it's been civil disobedience that has aligned the two whenever they grow apart. And especially in this country, civil disobedience is part of why we have the rule of law today. Even the revolutionaries who instituted our system had previously been engaged in civil disobedience, and they set up this legal system where the core part of our legal system, the foundation of it, was jury trials.
We have 5 seconds. Are you sorry you did what you did?
No, not at all. It's worked out better than I ever expected, and the consequences were something that I could deal with, and that weren't as bad as I had been afraid of.
Tim DeChristopher released last month after 21 months in prison for bidding in a public auction of oil and gas, drilling on thousands of acres of public land in his home state of Utah. That does it for the show. I'll be giving the commencement address at Hampshire College tomorrow in Massachusetts. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR, joined in the studio by Dennis Reimars, who's our WHFR news director, who's just getting on mic right now. Are you there?
I think I'm here.
Yes, there you
all
are.
Right. Yeah, okay. We're getting things set up for our special day today.
Yes, and as I put actually a story, it's very exciting. Now, after May 14th, we kind of know exactly, I say kind of, I'll explain in a second, who the council and the candidates for mayor of Dearborn are. And, of course, in other cities, the May 14th deadline was the same throughout Michigan. And so we know who those candidates are, with the exception, here's that exception, is that the local clerk's office has to do the research to find out if these people's petitions are actually valid. If they, all the signatures are valid to the minimum number, I think it's usually about 100. And is that person a current resident of the city? So there's actually a little bit of leeway here, a little fudge factor. Some things might change in some cities about who actually will be on that ballot, but it all has to be worked out by May 20th, which is coming up soon. It's actually Monday. So that's when the city clerk offices around the state have to report to the state about who's going to actually be on the ballot, legally on the ballot. So, but we're pretty sure we know who's going to be on that ballot. And so WHFR is going ahead bravely, as no man has gone before, no person has gone before. And we've actually beginning our first interview with a candidate for Dearborn City Council, a challenger. We don't have time here, and you probably all already know about the four incumbents who are going to try to be reelected again. So, and we'll mention their names, don't worry, we will. But there's a lot of challengers, and some of their names are not known to you at all. Some you've heard of in some contexts in the past. And we want to give them a chance to speak their mind. And our goal is about 15 minutes per city council candidate here in Dearborn, between now and August the 6th, which is the primary election. And, of course, the top vote-getters there will go on to compete among one another in the November election. But at this point, well, a lot of challengers, and we'd like you to know who's going to be in the running and kind of what they stand for. So our guest today, we're expecting Kristen Taylor here at about 1:30 in about 25 minutes from now. So stay tuned for that one. Or if you're listening on the podcast, just fast forward, just grab that little cursor. But there's a lot of important things we're going to be talking about between now and then. We also want to ask Kristen, as sort of a reporter for us, we're going to give her probably about an extra 5 minutes past that 15 for each, because she was actually at the budget meeting, at least we believe she was going to be, this last Tuesday here in the city of Dearborn. And she was encouraging a lot of people to show up for that and express their opinions, because there's some late-breaking news, especially about the Severstall money. Did you hear about that one, Dennis?
I think it was
there you are.
You got me. Number two, three. Is it to the tune of about $8.5 million?
Yes. This is somewhat strange, but it was agreed to a few years back, 2008 or whatever. It's a payment in lieu of taxes. That's referred to as a pilot payment in lieu of taxes. So, well, I mean, why don't they just pay their taxes? It's probably less. That's probably why.
Absolutely.
But anyway, this extra money was originally, I understand, going to go to help build a conference center next to the Hyatt Regency Hotel in the center of Dearborn. And, of course, it's not even the Hyatt now, and nobody's sure if they need a conference center anymore. And so the money just automatically goes to the city of Dearborn, and they can spend it any way they want to. And it's somewhat controversial. I'm sure Kristen will comment on that. And it's going to be decided quick by the Dearborn City Council exactly where that so-called extra money is going to go. And some of it, well, she'll go on. She can get overly excited about it. I do think that it's worthy of everybody's attention. So we'll bring up that whole question about the pilot money from Severstall and what the effect of that meeting was on Tuesday. So I'm going to try to do about 5 minutes of that from Kristen Taylor, who, as a local activist, she did attend that meeting. And then we're going to try to start the usual questions, try to be fair in terms of specifically her candidacy, and she'll probably repeat some things, but her candidacy for Dearborn City Council. Okay. One of the first things that attracted my attention was the, and I want to get this out of the way first, was the headline. And often I want to bring things to your attention based on the Dearborn Press and Dearborn Times Herald, our weekly papers here, or biweekly, twice a week, is that biweekly? Anyway, two editions a week from the Dearborn Press and Guide that we get locally, because the headlines are, in some cases, and that's why I like to mention it, not really representative of what the article says.
Sometimes in fact, downright misleading.
Yeah, it gives you the wrong idea. And that headline is Mystic Creek Losing Money, okay? And it seems like, oh, my goodness, you know, that's out by Camp Dearborn, and now we're operating the Mystic Creek Golf Club and Banquet Center. So it's like their country club is also a banquet center for things. And you get the idea that, oh, well, let's just get rid of it. Let's sell it. In fact, I think we just took it over, in fact. But nonetheless, there have been some changes out there. But here's the story. And even in the first paragraph, you see that the headline leads you definitely in the wrong direction. They say it's been operating at a slight loss since the city took over its operations last year,
okay.
2012. In fact, it was only November of 2012. So a slight loss after having it only about 6 months from November to May.
Right.
Okay. Slight loss. And the sentence finishes. This is the lead sentence. But it's expected to finish this fiscal year in the black.
Hmm.
So Mystic Creek losing money?
Well, technically it's accurate.
Yeah, but it's only a slight loss.
Sure.
And it's only the beginning of the year. So by the time the fiscal year, which is the end of June, mm-hmm. I guess, I think it's, and if they're using the same one the city uses, we'll be okay. And yeah, it says here the new fiscal year starts July 1st. So in 1 month, they'll be in the black. So the headline is definitely, and realize, folks, we're not blaming Joe Slezak here at the Press and Guide who wrote the story, but where were the editors on this one? They glanced over the first sentence, and they missed the word slight, and they missed the fact that it's only 1 month or 6 weeks at most away from not losing money, not being at a loss. And so, I mean, it remains to be seen, but they've already got, because it changed owners, technically, to the city, They lost some rentals because they didn't know who was actually operating the property. So some people didn't rent because they didn't have anybody to contact even.
Right.
The city actually ponied up $74,000 to the previous owner for lost revenue because of the transfer. Okay. But even involving that, now that we've had the city in charge, okay, people are renting the banquet center. People are playing golf now. It's doing fine. So it'll be making a profit. So that's completely wrong to say that Mystic Creek is losing money. It's only a slight loss, and it's only for a few more weeks. And the projection is quite solid. They've got the rentals to make money before 6 weeks from now, at the end of the fiscal year. So I'm sorry, who's ever editing, and who knows who's the editing, the president guide, there's actually no one that has the title of editor anymore. So I'll blame the publisher then, all right? That's just really wrong. Now, if you read through these articles, and I assume you always do if you subscribe to the Times Herald and the Press and Guide, or just maybe you throw up your hands after the first paragraph and say, oh, it's all another loss of the city and mismanagement, and I just don't want to read anymore. Well, if you actually read to the end, there is a loss factor here, turning to page 4A, and it's only four pages further in, okay? And, in fact, the city council was talking about this. In fact, by the way, Mystic Creek, this is just on page 4A, for a little further down, they're going to see probably a $100,000 profit for the fiscal year. Okay? So
I'd like to lose money that way.
Yeah, that's that just shows you how inaccurate this slight loss or losing money at Mystic Creek was for a headline. And further, I have to mention Councilman David Bazzi. I can't remember. Is he running? Is he one of the incumbents that's running again?
Yes,
then I can quote him and see what you think. He says he still has trepidation about being in the golf course business, especially in a neighboring county. Ooh, a foreign county. Ooh, isn't that scary? Ooh. Anyway, he says the city already runs Robert Herndon's Dilborn Hills Golf Course in the city's West End. Yeah, I think some people would say if they're going to be losing money, well, maybe we shouldn't do it. Although other people would say, especially if it's in another foreign county, I mean, not foreign, that's just a joke, of course, but way out there. Mm-hmm. How far is that, Dennis? You drive that way.
Which county?
Well, this is out in Midland.
Well, that's a little further.
Golf course.
Yeah, that's a little further. That's a couple hours away.
No, this is only 45 minutes away, Camp Dearborn.
Oh, Camp Dearborn. They said Midland.
Well, the middle of some land, I don't know.
Oh, no, you're right. It's 45 minutes.
It's about 45 minutes at Camp Dearborn. That's
absolutely
Mystic Creek. That's what I'm talking about.
I'm sorry.
Okay. No. And I made the joke about foreign, so it probably gave you the idea it was in Hong Kong or something.
I'm thinking at least Canada.
Yeah, at least Canada. They're so foreign.
Yes.
Anyway, and of course they aren't. I don't think a city should be in that kind of business, but providing recreation for people of Dearborn, especially if it makes a profit, makes some sense to me. How many Dearborn residents actually use the Herndon Dearborn Hills Golf Course? Now, it's one of the few public courses around, and the fees are much less than private courses, so it's actually doing a service for a lot of people. If we're making money on that one, we should probably keep it. However, and I'm so old, I remember back, we've had to put out, and it's over $300 million, I choke up to say this, it originally was going to be over $400 million, for the combined overflow sewer project mandated by the federal government in the state of Michigan. And we're still building, and we've gotten extensions to build all the way through 2030 now. So we're still paying for that $300 million just here in the city, 100,000 residents, or 95,000 to be accurate, more accurate. We're still paying for that. In fact, Mayor Guido, when he was alive, clearly said to me off the air, you know, when people realize how much money that is, they're not going to vote me back in the office, into office. Well, he passed away before that became known. And everybody kept drawing out the final day when the money would start appearing on your water bills. And it's now hitting our water bills, but people they've probably forgotten that it's because of that decision. See, 30 years ago, they could have gotten rid of the Herndon Golf Course, okay, which they owned. I mean, they just could have stopped the golf course thing, and they could have built all the evaporation pools there. Now, that's above ground, not below ground, not tunnels, not channels, not anything that cost 300 million for about, I understand, according to some engineers I talked to then, 50 to 100 million. Okay. The Herndon facility would have been totally adequate. And in fact, it would have been done years ago and would have been paid for years ago. And now we've got to pay for this bad decision. And the first one was a really first time they're trying to build some pits and tunnels that were like 20 or 30 feet high. And then they ran into sulfur gas, and a construction worker died. Others were injured. And then the company got sued by the city, and then they went bankrupt, and then we had to start over. And then Mayor O'Reilly did come up with a plan to both renovate and his people in the administration to renovate the old failing sewer systems in Dearborn with the new capacity. And so they're really getting two for one now at a somewhat reduced cost. But it's still, of course, we would have had to do that renewal someday anyway, because a lot of these old sewer systems were in very bad repair, especially in West Dearborn. So this, it's a new double-purpose project, and we've got permission to do extensions. But it's still $300 million when we could have got out of it for $100 to $150, sacrificing the Herndon Golf Course and any profits it would have brought in.
Right. That was 30 years ago. Was the current mayor's father in charge back then? Or that have been around that in the 80s?
No. This was under Guido.
Okay.
Yeah, this was under Guido that these decisions were made. And, in fact, the fellow who was in charge of that water department, I can't remember the administrator's actual title, but the water department administrator actually had no background in engineering.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he was a telecom student.
Well, you know how smart we are.
Nice guy. But you know, don't ask me about building a new sewer. What do I know? I don't have those kinds of classes or background. And he was dependent on a few consultant reports that, as it turned out, were flawed about there being sulfur gas and about being water leakage under these plans. And he went for the big, highest ticket plan with technology that wasn't really ever done before. And got into trouble, and he finally did find another job before we got too far into this project. But he was, pardon the metaphor, he was out of his depth. And in this regard, very good communicator, nice person, and so on. So he moved on to something that was closer to his area of expertise. And I'm not blaming this on him. But Guido was so stubborn about many things, and some people liked him for that. You know, he guided us where we need to go, Guido.
Was that his tagline?
No, but it could have been, because his family always pronounced the name Guido.
Yeah.
And it was only when he was running for office that his campaign advisor said, that sounds really weak and sleazy, you know, like old-time Italian images, you know, stereotypes. And Guido, from now on, it's Guido.
Guide you to where
and he was very strong. But of course, what was his background? Telecom.
Sure.
From Wayne State.
Yeah.
And so he could communicate. He knew how to manipulate the media. He knew how to put out a great image. And he did a lot of great things as a mayor. Okay, fine. I kind of liked him most of the time. But as someone I had to interview, and until the last couple of years, he wasn't very forthcoming. He would always deflect a difficult question with a witty joke that suggested, if you continue on this track, I'm going to cut your legs off. That was the tone he used, and only an Italian ethnic person could have that tone, I think, and pull it off. And so he was scary. He was actually scary to interview when he wanted to be defensive. Didn't say anything, but just saying the tone was, you know, okay. Anyway, so Bazzi does raise the question, should we run any golf courses? And especially one that's in that far out county. Okay. Well, I think if it's making money, then what the heck? Okay.
It's the real crux of it is, does the city have any business running a condo, a complex down in Florida? Does the city have any business, blah, blah. You get people in charge that know what they're doing. It's that simple. I mean, the city is overseeing something and putting up the money, but they're not running it daily.
Yeah. Of course, the condo complex that you mentioned has been sold now. It's over and done with. We're not running that.
No.
The problem was there was going to be upgrade cost, and rather than having to pay them, the residents there probably couldn't afford to pay for the difference. Usually, you know, condo fees pay for any new maintenance that has to be done. But when you need major maintenance, all of a sudden the condo fees jump up so high that most of the residents there have to move out.
There's no choice, sure.
Right. I've seen it happen many times, which is one reason. In fact, I was in a condo myself once, and the idea is condos are great when they're new and for about 20 or 30 years. Then when they need a new roof, or what happened to mine was I had one in Taylor, and even though it was new, I discovered they didn't waterproof the basements enough.
Oh, no.
And there were no basements. There was a floor that was, the first floor was halfway down in the ground. So we're talking about leakage, you know, from water coming through the walls. It was leaking the first floor of the residences in all the buildings. So the condo association, the company had already given it to the residents, had to go and get people to dig with hose, you know, with those big digging machines around the outside of every building, go down 6 feet, put waterproofing and coating on the outside, and then fill these trenches with stones to allow greater water, well, water not building up next to the walls, but going straight down into the lower ground area. And that raised our condo fees, I think, 4 or 5 times.
No kidding.
What they were. And they started pretty low, and then they were almost, well, I decided to go buy a house in Dearborn.
Yeah, that was right. But this
can be huge, and whatever the combination of reasons, we're out of that enterprise in Florida, mainly because it was going to start costing us significant money.
Right, but all I'm saying is that it wasn't like the administration here went down there to run it. They had people in place that knew what they were doing and when to cut their losses.
Right.
So, I mean, the same thing will happen. No, Mr. Bazzi says we're not in the business of golf courses, but we do know people that can run them, and maybe that would be an effective way to generate revenue.
Yeah, and it looks like we do have some people that might be pretty effective at getting Mystic Creek to stay in business and to keep coming in with that profit. Well, the loss leader here, though, in the city, if you read to the end of the story, oh, my God, all the way to the end of the story, is actually the Michael A. Guido. Didn't I just say that name? Theater and Studio A. Uh-huh. That is the performing complex part of the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. It seems that every year since 2004 and the 2004-2005 fiscal year, the projected deficit has been a loss, and this year it was $84,000. So the combined loss for the 9 years is $734,000 and change, so almost $750,000. Now, they say rentals to local groups are a community service. They also lose money. Last time WHFR tried to rent Studio A, they wanted $500 for 4 hours.
From us, an entity at the school. Interesting.
And we're nonprofits.
Sure.
Now, I think they've reduced that, to some cases, to nothing for certain community groups. I do know of that, and I'm very jealous because that wasn't the way it was. In fact, they used to tell me in the early days, oh, we're all booked for a year. Even Henry Ford Community College, you can't even book your graduation next year in the big auditorium, which is not Studio A, but, oh, it's all rented. And apparently it's not all rented now.
Right.
So what's the difference, folks? Why did people give up on it? Because the rental was too high?
Right.
But my comment on this is, this was known by the arts groups. You know, well, there's two issues. First of all, the Dearborn Council of Arts, DCAC, Dearborn Community Arts Council, which doesn't really exist anymore. Anyway, that group said, we need an auditorium added to this exercise center. This is how the idea came about for the theater and the other performing arts complexes. We need a theater about 1,800 seats to 2,000 seats or more. Minimum, in order to make money, based on other professional touring theaters making money in the area, like there's one out in Oakland County that's run by the community college out there, and that's what this article says, too. Our 1,200-seat auditorium is too small. Now, it's equal to some of the auditoriums at the high schools, and it's one of the biggest in the city, probably equal to the biggest in the city, but it's not big enough to get enough people in for really top-name artists. Artists that would pack the place would cost a fortune, to get them to come here. But you could make money if you got 2,000 people paying, well, I don't know, $50, $75 each, for it. So the break-even point was more. Well, of course, Guido said, well, more seats will cost more money. We don't have the money to build it. They got $10 million extra from Ford Motor Company, and that's how the name Ford is on that building, because they needed more money, especially for the theater complex. But they didn't have enough to make it really big enough to be a moneymaker with top-line, big-name artists that would pack the place. And so that's why it's losing money now. Now, my bottom line point that was also made by the DCAC and its leaders when this started 15 years ago or more, there are some things in the city you're not going to make money on. And that's the fact, Jack. That's why we pay taxes. There are some things that we have to put money out on. You're not going to make money on the fire department. What? If somebody's house burns down, you're going to charge them extra for the services provided to save part of their house or all of their house or something if a fire started there? No, we don't do chargeback. It's a community collective effort for the good of the city. Has we ever made a profit in the libraries? No. What about the pools? I don't think so, although we were raising some money through the libraries, through fines and through pools and things like that. So, you know, we definitely have a ways to go to consider, and maybe the new city council, yes, will actually be able to consider some of the necessities of life that everybody should collectively pay for here out of our taxes. Can we agree to snow plowing that's up there, you know, when you get 4 inches of snow on the road? In front of your drive, I would rather save money by having it only plowed when there's like 8 or 10 inches. It's my personal feeling. If we can save money with a contract that says, well, it's only going to be half the number of plows per year, that would be good. Nonetheless, do you think we should keep the Herndon Golf Course, even if it's making money? Do you think we should keep the Adrae Theater? Well, I think we have to, really, because it's there. It's part of the complex. And yes, it's going to take good management and good programming to get a lot of people to attend and full utilization of that complex. But I bet it's going to lose money ongoing, a little bit. And I know it looks like $750,000 over 9 years, a lot of money. But maybe there's some things that could be done differently. I hate to suggest bringing in a consulting firm for a couple $100,000 to figure out what we should do. But nonetheless, it's a great facility. It's top notch. It's just the theater's a little small to make money on. Okay. And by the way, this article doesn't really indicate to me clearly here that the theater in Studio A, the performing arts part of it, I mean, are they making money on the exercise part? You know, I don't know. It's not clear from the article. There's no mention in the article about the number of memberships to go there and swim in the pool there and indoor pool and climb the rock wall and so on. So, if that's making money, then maybe the whole complex together is sort of breaking even. So we'll try to find out more about that, of course. Well, our special guest for today, Kristen Taylor, is in the studio, but we're going to take just a little break here and go ahead and run our usual commentary from our friendly populist, that's Jim Hightower, and be back with the interview with Kristen Taylor, a candidate now for the Dearborn City Council, and especially looking forward to the primary election in August. So take a listen to Jim Hightower. He's talking about political nincompoopism. Haven't heard that word in a while. Can I say that on the radio? Nincompoopism. It's all one word, folks. It's from in the 40s. We used to say that. He or she is a nincompoop. And it wasn't a dirty word, so don't think the worst of him here. And then about the job crisis continuing in America. So listen up, and we'll be back with our interview.
My state of Texas seems to have an inordinate share of nincompoops in public office. But it's only fair that office holders from other states be considered before deciding which one is the nincompoopiest of all. Give credit to Pennsylvania, for example, whose GOP governor, Tom Corbett, recently scored big nincompoop points by explaining why his state ranks 49th in job creation. Many employers, the governor grumbled during a radio interview, say we're looking for people, but we can't find anybody that has passed a drug test. Yes, the old my constituents are a bunch of drug addicts, Dodge. That's world-class nincompoopery. Did I mention that Tom's voter approval rating is down to 38%? But compare Corbett to one of the Lone Star State's Congress critters, Steve Stockman. Steve's re-election campaign has put out a bumper sticker with this uplifting thought: if babies had guns, they wouldn't be aborted. Wow, that's two nincompoopisms in only 8 words. Still, even Steve can't hold a candle to Representative Louis Gohmert, the mouth that never shuts. Vice chair of a House Homeland Security subcommittee, Gohmert recently revealed an astonishing piece of intelligence on the terrorist threat to the U.S. of A. Al-Qaeda, he informed the whole world, has set up radical Islamist camps on the other side of the Texas-Mexico border. Really? No. But the Islamist alarmist proceeded to tell us that Mexican drug gangs are teaching Al-Qaeda infidels how to cross the border into Texas. And they're also being trained to, quote, act like Hispanics. Wondered many Latinos on this side. How does Louis think one would act Hispanic? Sing La Cucaracha? Drive a lowrider? Dress up as landscapers? This is Jim Hightower saying, but think is not part of Gohmert's shtick, which is what puts him atop the world of nincompoops.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Stock market soars, exulted a typical headline in early May when the Dow Jones average topped 15,000. But this index of Wall Street wealth gives a false picture of our nation's true economic health. Yes, the privileged few are doing extremely well, but the workaday many are struggling and falling further and further behind as the jobs market sinks steadily from mere recession down into depression. The monthly unemployment reports don't tell the depths of misery out here in the real world beyond the view of Wall Street and Washington elites. For example, President Obama hailed the news that unemployment dipped to 7.5% in April. Unstated, though, was the stark reality that this good news dip was not due to a jump in job offerings, but to a bad news labor market so weak and discouraging that Americans are dropping out of it or never entering it. More than a third of our working-age population is no longer even in the job market, and only 58.6% of us are employed. Put the opposite way, 41% of the potential workforce is not working, about 102 million people. One more statistic, and it's a chiller. More than one out of five American families report that last year, not a single family member had a job. Our people are trapped in a jobs crisis that's sucking the economic vitality out of our nation, but our leaders even refuse to acknowledge it. In fact, corporate chieftains deliberately exacerbate the crisis by hoarding trillions of dollars that ought to be rushed into job-creating expansions. And politicians add to the casualties by gleefully firing hundreds of thousands of teachers, firefighters, and other valuable public employees. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's middle class is burning to the ground, while Washington fiddles with nonsense and Wall Street feathers its own nest. It's disgraceful.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
So I hope you're taking notes on that and see how important Jim Hightower's comments are to us all across the country. And he's based in Austin, Texas, but we love him. He expresses himself well, sometimes very succinctly. Pithy, in fact, if I can say that on the radio. I think I can.
Yeah.
I'm always checking my language.
Somebody
here.
That's the title of a book by, who is it, O'Reilly? Hello? I'm on two.
Yes, I know.
All right.
There.
The CNN guy, Bill O'Reilly.
Yes.
His book is something, it has pithy in the title, so uh-huh. I'm gonna vote we can say it on the air.
His most recent books are all about presidents, you know, like Lincoln and so on, so I don't know how pithy Lincoln was, but he got a good phrase in a minute. Well, let's start right away with our special guest in the studio, Kristen Taylor. Welcome again to the new WHFR Journal, Kristen.
Hi, thank you for having me again.
This time, for about the first 5 minutes, we want you to act like a reporter for us because you were at the city council meeting here in Dearborn this last Tuesday, and there were some issues that came up that really haven't even been in the papers yet. And I mentioned earlier in this show about the Severstall money, pilot money, payment in lieu of taxes. I was wondering who got the idea for that one. And, of course, my guess was, off the top of my head, that that payment in lieu of taxes was less than if they had to pay taxes. But this, and I gave the background on that. But, okay, so the city's got $8.5 million they didn't have before. So on that issue, what came up Tuesday about this?
Well, I'll try to summarize it. And it's funny, though, that you said I should take my journalist hat and put that on because someone read my blog post of follow-up on this and actually commented and told me that if I'm so into it, I should run for council, but I must be afraid to. And I said, actually, I am running for council. So, you know, I guess I took the journalist approach to that. And, you know, I guess that worked out pretty well. But so this issue generally is the money suddenly appearing isn't so much of a truism. This, I think you said you went through the history, but apparently has been foreseen for quite a few years. And I'm trying to get details on exactly what that is and what the terms of that are, and I'll get that out to people as soon as I do. But essentially, we have $8.5 million that is available through this pilot. The mayor has been calling it a donation. Others have called it a gift that, again, is not – those are not interchangeable terms, but they have been used as such. And so I'm trying to get to that, the bottom of that as well. But the – on Thursday at the Committee of the Whole meeting last Thursday, the two items on the agenda were, or two of the items on the agenda, one was to grant authority to the mayor to sign contracts and closing documents with ArtSpace for purchases of certain portions of City Hall. Certain portions was not defined. We still don't know what that means. The other one in question was to allocate $8.5 million from Severstall to essentially $5 million for the move to the new City Hall building that the city has already purchased, $1.5 million to create a memorial park, and the rumor has it that it would be named after for Severstall, $300,000 for to give to ArtSpace to conduct a feasibility study on our current City Hall building, and then another, here I have the details right in front of me. And another $1.45 million to give to ArtSpace to finance the purchase of our City Hall building. So that would turn out to be about $1.795 million that we would be donating from that money to ArtSpace to purchase our City Hall building, which was agreed upon to, that they would purchase it for $1.65 million, which ends up us giving them roughly $100,000+ in the end of that. So once that came out, this Friday morning was insane. People were calling me this information. I wasn't at the meeting, but I got a lot of this information. I pulled it together, and I wrote a blog post about it and really just encourage people to get to the council meeting on Tuesday, because once it passes through the Committee of the Whole, then that means it goes to a vote on the regular council meeting following. So we asked people to go out there and talk to them about it, because I believed that that was an improper way to use, regardless of what this money was intended for. If it can be used on other things, then it should be used on the many, many funding problems and deteriorating buildings and issues that we have as needs in the city right now. So Tuesday, we had a pretty good showing. People came out. The two issues came up, and immediately before they were even finished being read through, they were tabled. Councilman Bazzi motioned, and Councilwoman Serini supported the motion to table both of the items, and they are going to be holding a study session on, essentially, I think mostly on the $8.5 million, but you would assume that the ArtSpace issue would be a part of that. So that happened, and then there was no discussion. Mm-hmm. And so I walked up at the end, and I had a few of my comments for the council at that point.
I bet, and maybe you can tie that into some of your interview for the council position coming up shortly. Yes, and I've already said it, it boggles the mind, but what was the details of that original agreement? Again, payment in lieu of taxes. So it wasn't really a gift. It was instead of, by definition of the term that's already been reported. But the other thing was, I bet Severstall wanted naming rights on, originally it was going to go to the new conference center next to the Hyatt,
correct,
which is not going ahead. So I think that's why they came up. Well, you know, we had some comments from veterans that we're going to lose the sort of veteran memorial around the old City Hall. So we'll move it at, and use some of the money for that. And that's what we'll put the Severstall name on. You know, because you don't want to name the new City Hall the Severstall City Hall. You know,
right,
that would be wrong.
The Dearborn Administration Center is probably right, much better of a name.
Although I heard 3 or 4 months back, which is why this naming thing must be in the small print somewhere, that they were just going to leave the Veterans Park there. They were going to move Mayor Hubbard's statue, but they weren't going to move the park. The park would stay there and next to Art Space Building. And I don't know why the change, except when the money all of a sudden became available. I bet it was, there's some small print about Severstall had to have naming rights for whatever was built. And it's crazy stuff happens, you know, behind the scenes, and sometimes you just have to accommodate or you have to say no to $8.5 million, which would be really wrong, I think. It's good that, it's not good there was no discussion even on the part of the council, apparently, right? They just saw your numbers, heard rumors, and they cut it off. They didn't want to either go on the record at that point. But a study session is very appropriate. So I you know, let's study it. Let's look at it. And yes, there's does in my last comment, and of course all the opinions on this show, including those from Kristen in the next couple minutes here, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. We have to say that once per show. Sorry, but it's
that's
true.
Okay.
And we thank them for letting us have our own opinions here. But yeah, it does seem something basically wrong about indirectly the city buying City Hall for art space. You know,
well, they're giving them money to help with the financing, and in the end, there wouldn't really be any because they paid everything. My question is, it may be similar to Dearborn Heights where I cover city council meetings. Study sessions, generally the public does not have a voice. They can attend them, they're open, but they can't really, like, you know, at the end of a regular city council meeting, people can go up as residents, and in Dearborn Heights they have 3 minutes uninterrupted to make their point.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's stopped by council to answer a question or ask a question, the 3 minutes is held and then they begin it again. But at study sessions, people were not encouraged. In fact, they were discouraged from speaking. So having people come out to know what's going on makes a lot of sense, but it's not like they're, you know what I mean? They're going to have to talk to people individually.
Well, it sounded, the way they talked about the study session, it sounded like they would give public comment time, probably
awesome,
similar to the way that they do it at the end in the council meetings. At budget meetings in Dearborn, that's right, you really don't say anything. You just sit and observe. You're not part of the actual meeting,
right,
as the public. But it did sound like they wanted to provide time for that. I think I will start bringing a timer, though, for that 3 minutes, because it gets easily interrupted when you go up there in front of the council.
Oh, it does. Sure. Sure.
Let me make another comment. Of course, after the study session, well, I guess they could have another study session if they wanted, but it would have to eventually come back to the council for a vote by the council. And the council, we know now, 3 out of 7 are not going to be returning. So it's not quite a lame duck council, although we don't know how many of the 4 incumbents will get reelected ultimately in November. So, you know, it seems like one of the many decisions about the city that's a really big deal, and we really won't have about 40% of those people coming back. So they can vote any way they want to, and they don't necessarily have a connection to what follows after, at least not legally anyway.
Right. They don't feel an obligation.
Might be chastised at Denny's restaurant or something, or Leon's. Okay, you're starting your 15 minutes of fame, but you can make
sure
a final comment on the Tuesday council meeting?
Well, there were a lot of other comments.
Yeah.
One person went up and asked if this was something that, you know, if someone gave money to the city and said, you can only use it for this purpose, but that purpose was not in the best interest of the residents of that city, does the city have an obligation to take the money and use it in that way? And they said, no, we don't. This is something that really needs to be thought through. And at that meeting, the reason they said it was being tabled was because the information wasn't even available. The council members haven't seen the art space contract.
Uh-huh.
I have talked to a few council members, and they told me they have not seen the Severstall agreement. And you can't go into a vote like that without that information. And Council President Tavelsky had a perfectly timed comment during that meeting when a few, I think the mayor and Councilman Bazzi, a couple other people, were repeating this phrase, we don't have the information, and that's why we need to have this study session. And he said, if we didn't have the information, it should never have come before the council to be voted on.
Bingo.
Because that day it would have been voted yes. And I think everybody knew that that would have happened. So it was really frustrating. And that, I guess, kind of leads into one of the reasons why I'm running.
Okay. Let me officially start. Today is on the new WHFR Journal. And it is May the 17th. It's kind of early, but it's the beginning of campaign season, folks, for the primary election on August 6th, and that will, of course, lead into the November actual election of the winners from that election. So with us today is Kristen Taylor, who's running for Dearborn City Council. So, Kristen, officially, you've got your 15 minutes of fame coming up here now. Begin by giving us a brief biography for yourself, educational background, jobs, and any other relevant experience you might want to mention towards being a city council person.
Okay. My name is Kristen Taylor. I just on Monday graduated from Wayne State University Law School. So I will soon, if I pass the bar, I'm crossing my fingers now, I will be an attorney in the state of Michigan this year. I also have a master's degree in integrated marketing communications. I went to Eastern Michigan for my undergrad and for that in marketing. I have a telecom background, actually, from my undergrad, but I was asked a question the other day of what my qualifications are to run for city council, and I said, you know, for the past few years, I've become known a little bit as a pot stirrer in the city of Dearborn, and I think we need that. The reason that I'm running and one of my qualifications for that is over the past few years, I have made it my personal goal to understand what's going on in the city and to help educate my fellow residents about what's going on. And we've formed groups. We have the Dearborn Residents for Accountability, which I was here around this time last year, I think, to talk about. And
You're part of Save the Pools organization.
Save Our Pools, right. And there's so much that happens, like you said, behind the scenes. You can go to a meeting and not know what's going on because even though you have an agenda before you, you don't have any of the backup. You don't understand the history behind it. Nobody explains it. I think that as I've been involved in all of those things, I've realized that we need council members and we need elected leaders to be involved in educating everybody on what's going on and to really be transparent about what the decisions are for and why they're making them and how it impacts people. And, I mean, you know, not everybody cares about every single penny or every single detail of every single decision, but it's important that those avenues are available, that those doors are not always closed. And I think that right now the doors are closed more often than they're open. And I want to be on the council to open those doors.
So I'm going to start with my blockbuster first question, and then we'll move on to other topics.
Okay.
But
hold on to your hat.
Mayor O'Reilly and his policies, have you been in favor of those or against? Would you be, therefore, an antagonist or a protagonist for the mayor if he's reelected too?
Well, I think a lot of people see me as a protagonist right now. I understand that view. I don't go at any of these things with the purpose of antagonizing or, well, I guess maybe I might have used protagonist incorrectly. But
you're a protagonist for the issues that you're supporting.
Yeah, and I antagonize sometimes with my questions.
But in terms of Mayor O'Reilly, you seem to be more against things he's done. But, of course, the middle ground I was wondering about, is it just some of his policies, all of the policies, is it just lockstep? I mean, you know, the way politics is going these days, it seems that you're either for the President of the United States or you're against him because of the political party you're in and no other reason. And no matter what the president does, it doesn't matter. You're either for or against because you're in a political party. That's obviously unrealistic thinking. That doesn't fit the nature of the world. But you have disagreed with quite a few of the policies that Mayor O'Reilly has brought about. So let me ask the first question, which is sort of related to that. Why not run for mayor?
Well, I think
you haven't. I mean, past the deadline, so you can't reconsider now. But
there's a lot of decisions that go into that. I actually just made the decision a week ago to run for city council, and that was because of personal things going on in my life, and I wanted to make sure that if I made that choice, I would be able to accept and and perform all of the needs that are required of that, which includes a lot of time. And I don't make those decisions lightly. That's something that, you know, I'm personally just starting off as an attorney. I have work that I want to do there. It's not the right time for me. And I just don't think that that would be appropriate for me to run for that position. But city council is where I can definitely make an impact.
No. And I wasn't aware of this, but I looked into your resume. You ran once before for Dearborn City Council.
I did in 2009. And the reason you weren't aware is because I was a write-in, and so nobody knew about me. But I did my best, and I really enjoyed it. But that's why I can say that since then, I have made that promise then, and I have fulfilled that promise to be involved and to understand the issues and to speak out and learn about them, and that's exactly what I've done. So in regards to the mayor and his policies and things like that, I am not coming into any of this saying I am for the mayor or against the mayor, I will always vote for or against him or any of those things. I am all about the process by which decisions are made and ensuring that it is fair and open and all the information is out there. If I hear a vote coming through like I did Thursday that made absolutely no sense with a lot of money being made and a lot of implications to that decision, and I didn't understand what was going on behind it, then I'm going to ask those questions, and I'm going to make sure that the people of Dearborn and that I, as a council member, understand what my vote means.
Okay, we'll hit the individual topics. New City Hall versus the old City Hall. Is it a completely done deal? Even if you didn't like the purchase of the ADP building, is it now a matter of damage control in terms of moving in? I said this before on the air, I would have rather had a separate ballot issue to put money into renovating the old City Hall, and I bet the people of Dearborn would have gone for it. They went for renovating the high school on the east side because of historic nature. I bet a separate ballot issue would have been passed just for that purpose, $8 or $10 million maybe. But now I know operating costs are very high, so... But that's unrealistic. I don't think we're going to go that far backwards. I mean, I guess we could put the building up for sale now, the ADP building, and see if anybody else would buy it in the next 5 or 10 years. But probably that's not going to happen. So how do you feel about the new City Hall?
Based on all these things that have happened, I think that this is the wrong decision to do right now. But I don't think that we've gone past the point of no return. And a lot of people have told me they think we have. I believe since Tuesday, since those agenda items were tabled, we now have the ability to ask our elected officials to sit back and think about what's happening, to really consider the needs of the people of Dearborn versus what I believe this move is, a want of the mayor and of whoever else supports it. I think that the $8 million from Severstall could very well go to fix the City Hall. And we've been told that City Hall needs about $8 million in repair. Mm-hmm. It's very convenient that those numbers match up. You know, the difference between the two buildings, they're telling us, is about $250,000 in operating costs. They say we would save that in the ADP building.
Per year.
But, you know, if you seal windows in the current City Hall building, you're going to save some money there, too. There's a lot of things that we could do. We could make smart decisions here instead of just jumping into a new project and walking away from something that might be a little more complicated than you might want it to be. So whether that money went to fix City Hall or went to a lot of other things that around the city that it could go to, I don't think it needs to go to moving City Hall. I don't think this is the right time to do that. Maybe in the future, but there are a lot more pressing needs right now.
Well, let's talk about those. Some of the topics, jump in wherever you want to. Fire department, the pools, libraries, historical museum, which is now cut to almost nothing without even a full-time curator. 19th District Court costs, too, had come up in the last year. Any comments about any of those?
Well, I obviously have to talk about the pools first. I've worked so hard with the pools. We, as we all know, we have 4 small pools that remain open and 2 pools that were mothballed a couple years ago. In the budget this year, the mayor clearly has said that there no pools will be closing. It's an election year. That would be a very bad decision. I think we all understand that. But if you look ahead, the budget is projected through 3 years, through 2016. If you look at the projected budget, there are pools projected at having $0 of revenue starting in fiscal year 2015, and then other pools starting fiscal year 2016. So it's very clear that those plans are in place to close a lot of our small pools and then permanently close them. That I have said many times, is the wrong decision. These pools do not cost that much money. We do not have to put that much capital into them. It's something that we could very easily allocate and be smart about and do it over a certain period of time, and we can ensure the longevity of those. And for such a small budget number, it has become a huge issue, and I'm still kind of baffled by why we continue to have this fight. I do understand, though, that some people don't think the pools are necessary, and there's other things that they think are important, like a library that's been closed, or our historical museum, and all. There's so many things that people recognize as truly valuable to the character of what Dearborn is, and those are the things that we need to be very careful about making any decisions to permanently remove in any way.
Isn't it really a question of income? If our income is still declining, Mayor O'Reilly explained on April 19th on the show, in great detail for an hour, that even though property values have kind of almost stabilized in Dearborn for personal, private, individual property, residential property, because the state of Michigan changed the criteria for the personal property that's actually owned by businesses, the non-lockdown things inside their buildings, and we've got Ford Motor and other, that we're going to have a loss of income from that kind of personal property, that non-lockdown business property, no thanks to the state of Michigan. And so we're going to be losing money for future years. And a lot of people have been laid off from the city full-time. Part-timers have been reduced to 28 hours, but that's a slightly different reason. Income ideas? How are you going to raise money?
Well, I don't have an easy answer for that, but I think that that's exactly the reason why it's so baffling to see a decision almost made such as the Severstall $8.5 million when you do have those problems. And like I said, like people have said, you can't rack up student loans and credit card debt and have your house falling apart and then get a bonus from work and go buy a boat. So, you know, it's a matter of priorities. And I think that if we can increase the income, that's definitely something. I don't know exactly how to do that. I can't give you the answer. But I think I've proven that I don't give up on finding those answers and doing that research when it's necessary. But I also think that that means when we have the money available, we need to use it the most effective way. And we have needs right now, and that's where it should be going.
Earlier in the show, we mentioned about some of the city's extras. Councilman Bazzi said, not so sure we need to operate a golf course out there by Camp Dearborn, the Mystic Creek thing, which is apparently the mistitled headline. It's losing money. It won't be losing money by the end of next month, and it's projected to make $100,000 a year. But there's other things. Camp Dearborn, is that breaking even or making a little money? New animal shelter is desperately needed. Mayor O'Reilly said he's going to give the old train station area to, he can't do it, with the city council's help, would try to give that area to the shelter and I guess make at least a token contribution to the new facility, but they'd have to raise most of the money themselves. And what about that West Dearborn paid parking and those towers that aren't even used for parking anymore? Just stop at that one. I mean, again, do we need all those things? These are sort of extras, but some of them, if they're breaking even or making money, I'm not sure you should say no to that, but paid parking? Let's take West Dearborn paid parking.
So we're going to talk about the one that's increasing our debt that we continue to have a debt on.
Yes, that's
a problem. Why don't we pay that off? I actually was parked in the parking structure just a few days ago, and my stepmom had come up for my graduation, and we had a number of spots to choose from.
Yes.
It's really, I know that there's some issues, some lawsuit issues still with some of the, I think, the property in between. Yes. So
Burton
obviously,
Katzman is still dragging out that, I think we want $16 to $20 million from them for not fulfilling what they promised to do. And apparently they're really guilty. They can delay it, but eventually, I thought they would have settled out of court by now, but that would have cost them money. Why not just keeping a few lawyers going for another 10 or 15 years, and maybe you can disappear before that. I don't know. I'm just not. But I think that was we've really got them by the hook there, but the hook is a long hook, and apparently we're not going to get any response to that. But, yeah, they're supposed to build a hotel in between.
Right, so there's still litigation there. Mm-hmm. Although I believe that area is where the West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority. I always say the wrong one, is planning to have a block party. So, you know, there's uses that people are being creative about, and those are things that we should support. But obviously, businesses are saying that they're hurting because of paid parking. We have those structures. This is something that we cannot just continue to walk forward and ignore and say, now we're going to go try all these other things because that didn't work. We still have to pay it, but it'll get taken care of. We just can't continue to walk down that line, and we need to take a step back and really be smart and strategize how we're going to handle these things in the future.
Okay, Kristen Taylor, candidate for Dearborn City Council. Coming up, the primary election is August 6th. Remember to be registered by July 6th or whatever. Do it before the 4th of July even. Don't wait if you're not registered to vote in Dearborn yet. I'd like to give you about a minute or so to sum up your reasons for looking. I know it's only a minute, but hit the highlights here. Reasons for people supporting you and your candidacy for city council. And then if you could conclude with any relevant contact information or any upcoming event, maybe fundraising, if you know of any. It's very early in the campaign right now, but anything else, scheduled debates that you know of, anything like that. Otherwise, we will, of course, report about those things ongoing for all the candidates here on the Journal in the future, too.
Sure. I very simply believe that the people of Dearborn need to be able to trust that their voice is not only being heard by the city council, but that it's being considered in the votes that the city council members make. I am going to be a city council person who looks to the people of Dearborn and listens to those voices. And so I'm asking now that people participate in the conversation with me, the conversations that we've started and have been having over the past years. And I think I've proven that I can get information and I can get it to you in a way that people can all be informed and understand what is happening in our city. My name is Kristen. It's spelled with a K. It's K-R-I-S-T-Y-N. My last name is Taylor. I have a Facebook group. Please go out and join that. I also have a blog. It's kristenforcouncil.wordpress.com. So, you know, I always encourage people, you don't have to agree with me. Just, I want to hear what you have to say. And let's actually have a dialogue here.
Thank you so much for your time today on the new WHFR Journal. I really appreciate having you here, even though it is early in the campaign, and we hope to look forward to seeing you at a variety of events this summer. We'll be at WHFR. We'll be out at Dearborn Homecoming, of course, for 3 days. We usually like to catch the candidates whenever we can for a little interview. We'll be broadcasting from our area out there, so be sure to come by there, too. But otherwise, the 15 minutes of fame plus a little is over for today. And the Journal is coming to an end. Highway 61 Blue Show will be starting shortly. I see our Blues DJ is just on her way in. So I'm going to cover with a few more stories here. And just to finish up the hour, today, May 17th, yes it is, food trucks returning to Dearborn for 2013. West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority, that's right, it's the authority, is going to host 6 rallies over the next few months. And the food trucks, these, and I call them gourmet food trucks, folks. It's not just a third-rate van with somebody who's like doing a football tailgate thing. These are professionals, folks, and a lot of great gourmet quality food coming from these trucks. And where is it going to be today? From and when? Today, it's beginning the season of food trucks from 5 to 9 p.m., and it's going to be in the Bryant Public Library parking lot. I better double check that. Uh-oh. It doesn't. It better be there because this is an early press release I'm looking at. So I'm trusting that's where it's going to be this time. They are going to be changing the locations in West Dearborn, maybe to between those parking towers. In fact, they tried that last year. But anyway, maybe you want to check out cityofdearborn.org for the latest information about this. But I suspect, I bet they're in the Bryant parking lot because the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market is not, okay, we've got a update via smartphone here. Today they're going to be between the parking deck, the well, and Moose's. Moose's, I haven't been there. That's in West Dearborn. So it's between the parking deck, the well, so it's not the parking towers, is it then? Somebody shake their heads here.
Yeah, it's by where the old...
Okay, I don't have your mics on. Don't worry about it. Just tell me. I can hear you, though.
By Le Cigar, right?
Yeah, it's